This week's parasha is Mehar and Bechukotai. In Parshat Mehar, we begin with the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel. So let's do a quick overview of what's going on with Shemitah. We're taught that from the time we enter the land of Israel, we count the years. 6 years, and then a seventh year. And we start to count again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and a seventh year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and a seventh year. After 7 cycles, we hit the year of Yovel, the Jubilee year. So let's begin with the 6. We count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and on the seventh year, we will not work the field. That's the year of Shemitah. That means we won't plant wheat. We don't even plant wheat a few months earlier already. So we don't really have new wheat in the field. We have to use last year and the year before. We store our wheat and we import wheat. So in the year of Shemitah, we don't work the fields. And we're allowed to pick the fruits. The fruits grow on their own, so everyone's allowed to pick the fruits. It's a year where we let the land rest. Before we continue discussing Shemitah, let's just understand the system of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Because that system pertains to most mitzvot of agriculture. Meaning this 7-year set is relevant to Tumah, Maaser. Let's begin. Year number 1. Year number 1 and 2, when we harvest our foods, so we have a mitzvah of giving the Kohen Truma, 1/50th of the crop. And then we have a mitzvah of Maaser. Maaser Rishon, we take one tithe, we give it to the Levi. And then on year number 1 and 2, we have Maaser Sheni, where we take another 10th of the crop, and we take it up to Jerusalem to eat it when we are pure, when we're not tamei. On year number 3, we do not take Maaser Sheni, but rather after we've taken Truma and Maaser Rishon for the Levite, we take Maaser Ani. On year number 3, we give the poor a 10th. Okay? Year number 4 and 5, again, we have Maaser Sheni. And year number 6, again, we will have Maaser Ani. Every 3 years after Pesach, we have Vidui Maaser. On Sukkot, I'm sorry. We have Vidui Maaser, where we say, I've kept all my duties. I gave my Tumah, I've given my Maaser. So every 3 years, it's like tax season, where you say, this is what I've done. So, this cycle of 3, 3, and then the 7th is relevant to our Maasrot. It's relevant because you're not supposed to give Maaser from last year's tomatoes on this year's tomatoes, from last year's sheep on this year's sheep. So we work with this cycle, this 7-year cycle, and it's relevant to a lot of things. Okay, so when we hit year number 7, we have a mitzvah not to work the land. That means we don't fertilize. That means we don't plow. That means we don't harvest. That means we don't take out the stones from the field. No, we don't clean the field and make it ready for plowing next year.
There's two different kinds of plowing right, that are talking
right
about.
Yes, sir.
It's a concept of the that you get wheat, no, flour, it's done after this. It's a concept. How is that possible in the year of Sukkot?
It's not. All the flour was last year's flour, but the reason today, because today our flour is washed, so our flour is safek chametz. This was not the case 100 years ago. The reason we're careful today, some people are careful, I'm not, but the reason some people think it's a good idea to get new flour is because our flour is safek chametz. What?
Beer and whiskey, like those people drink this, get
Yeah, I said I don't I don't view that as an important chumrah. Yes, sir. I meant I wouldn't invest my energies in that.
So, the rules that come for the truma also account for the same food you give for the Levites. The same thing.
Again?
But the rules around truma, they also account for the same with the food you give for the Levites.
No. Truma is holy and Meiser is not.
It's not holy?
No.
And in the future, are we not allowed like, to farm, but also on a commercial basis?
No. You're not allowed to plow for yourself. You're not allowed to plow for your neighbor. No. No working the land. Yes, Vinny.
I might be confusing it just with Chol HaMoed, but you, because there's the planting that there's the harisha that's to prepare the land, and then there's one that just prevents damage. Preventing damage is also moving. It can be moving stones.
We don't do any of them on Shemitah, but your question is good. I wrote about it a few months ago.
Is it just Moed that you don't?
The first mission of Hichos Chol HaMoed tells you there's a correlation between Moed and Shemitah. That's why it was nice that you viewed it. They do go together. You see in Hichos Chol HaMoed that many of the laws go hand in hand. Coming back to our parsha. So we're not allowed to work the land. That means, let's see, you have a yard. So on Shemitah, you're not going to work the yard. On Shemitah, you let everyone come in and pick your fruit. You could pick fruit and they could pick fruit. There are esrog orchards where you can go in Shemitah, in Beit Shemesh, and all over the country, and pick your own esrog, because they let the togim go wild. They let everyone pick their own. So, yeah, it is.
Esrog can grow from year to year.
Okay. Shemitah begins already on Pesach. From Pesach, the year before Shemitah, we already stopped plowing the fields and planting them. We from Pesach earlier we stopped. Now what happens with all the vegetables that grow on their own? If you're picking tomatoes, every so often a tomato is going to fall on the ground and get stepped on, and some of its seeds will go on the ground and grow. And the next year, even if you didn't plant tomatoes, you're going to have some tomatoes growing. That's what's called sefichim. Those are the things that grow from the seeds that fall, so we don't harvest them. On Shemitah, I'm not allowed to pick my fruits as though I'm the owner. I have to let everyone come in and pick the fruits. The court has a mitzvah to count the years, to say this is year number one, this is year number two, etc., until year number seven. Okay, so now practically what happens? So, practically, the Jewish people always had a hard time with Shemitah. That's the haftarah that we read in this week's parsha, where the Navi in Yirmiyahu tells them that they're going to be exiled because they didn't keep Shemitah the way they should, they didn't keep Yovel the way they should. So, we've always had a problem with this. And so, in the days of the Second Temple, the rabbis instituted a rabbinic institution called Otzar Beitim. The courts would come in and take over people's fields. Shemitah would happen, so the courts would come in and take over everyone's fields. And then the courts would gather all the fruit into public warehouses, and whoever wanted to come have the fruits could come to the public warehouses. Nowadays, we also have Otzar Beitim. What happens now is that the courts realize that you and I, we can't travel out to the Golan to pick a few mangoes. We can't travel down to Be'er Sheva to harvest a few clementines or oranges. So how are we going to get our Shemitah fruit? So what the courts do is they come to the farmer and they say, we will take over your land for you if you'd like. Whatever farmer wants can sign in with the Beis Din, with the court. And then the court tells him, these are the tasks you're permitted to do on Shemitah, and these are the tasks you're prohibited to do. our rule is ukmeilana, whatever keeps the tree alive, you're allowed to do. So that's why in Shemitah you're allowed to water your garden so it doesn't die. You're allowed to water your tree that it doesn't die. You're allowed to do acts, many acts, that will prevent the growth from dying. Avruye ilana, but whatever you're going to do to make it grow more, to flourish, that is asur on Shemitah. And the courts give them guidelines. They work with them to figure out what is necessary. Now the trees produce, so we have banana crops on Shemitah, we have oranges on Shemitah, we have all these wonderful fruits on Shemitah from Otzer Beis Din. And the courts don't want us to confuse it with regular produce. You're not supposed to do commerce with Shemitah fruits. So the courts say, we will establish points where you can come and pay to cover our cost. Meaning you're not paying for the fruit. If a banana ordinarily would cost you 6 shekel a kilo, 7 shekel a kilo, here the court says, we'll send a bag of bananas. A bag of bananas without weighing costs us, let's say, 3 shekel to prepare, 4 shekel, depending on our cost. Whatever our cost is, we have to pay the farmer a certain amount to man the fields. We have to pay the workers, we have to pay the tractor. So we'll factor our costs and the margin we need to keep this operation running, and that's what you pay. And so we have selling points in people's homes all across the country where you can buy Otzer Beis Din. Now, in the last 2 Shemitahs, there has been an organization that tries to develop Otzer Beis Din to a much larger, broad-scale operation, and they call themselves Otzar Haaretz. And they got a contract with Rami Levy, they got a contract with Yenot Titan, they got a contract with the army. So they were able to take over tons and tons of fruits that they would give through Otzar Beit Din. On one level, it's a wonderful thing what they did. On another level, it's a little bit problematic because you're not supposed to give Shemitah fruit to a non-Jew. When they sell it in Rami Levy and Shar Binyamin, where most of the clients are Arabs, then they are giving holy Shemitah fruit to non-Jews. That's not exactly what should be happening here. So it has its challenges. They are not able to keep up with the signs. They're supposed to have signs that say, these are regular fruits and vegetables, these are Shemitah fruits and vegetables. After class, you guys can come down. On my phone, I have pictures. When I went to the fruit market, I took pictures to send my nieces and nephews to show them what it's like to buy fruits in Israel in the year of Shemitah. You see the signs. This is holy, this is holy, this is from Chutz Laretz, this is not holy, this is grown by non-Jews. So on Shemitah, we have 3 types of produce when we go to the market. We have produce that's imported from Chutz Laretz, so that's not holy. Now, what you have to ask yourself is, what is Chutz Laretz? So if you're buying Holland peppers, you know what Chutz Laretz is. But if you're buying tomatoes that are Chutz Laretz, it's very possible they're importing them from Gaza. They're importing them from Jordan. So you have to ask yourself if you really want to fund that. So that's one type of fruit and vegetable, Chutz Laretz. Then, in a second, then you have what's called Otzer Beis Din. It's overseen by the courts, and those are fruits and vegetables, fruits that are grown in Israel, and they have holiness, which means you're not supposed to waste it. If you have a banana that's Otzer Beis Din, that's grown in Israel in Shemitah, under the auspices of the Beis Din, so if you ate half the banana, you can't just toss the other half. You put it in a bag if you don't want to eat it. If it rots on its own, that's not your problem. But you're not allowed to destroy it. You're not allowed to put it with your coffee spills and the waste that you throw in your garbage pail. Because Shemitah fruit is considered holy, you're not supposed to waste it. Are you allowed to give it to your child to eat? Yes. But your child is a 2-year-old who eats one bite of the banana and bashes the other 2/3 on his brother's head. That's fine. You're allowed to let children eat Shemitah fruit. You don't have to worry about it. That's permissible. When you make Havdalah with wine or grape juice that's from Shemitah, you don't have the cup overflow because you're not supposed to spill out any Shemitah grape juice, unless, of course, you'll pour it back in your cup and drink it in the end. So we're more careful with Shemitah. What about compost? So what we do is, even the peels of the Shemitah fruit we're careful with. So we don't put them in a regular garbage. We put them in a bag out the window, and after a day or two that they're no longer edible, orange peel is edible. We don't eat it, but orange peel is edible. Lemon peel is edible. The recipes where you grind the lemon peel into your... What? Lemon zest, right? It's delicious. So maybe with our pesticides it's not so edible, I don't know. But at the end of the day, we put the cucumber peels and the carrot peels, we put them in a bag outside the window. After a day or two, they're no longer edible. We toss them in the regular garbage or in a compost heap. That's fine. Our goal is that it shouldn't be edible, and I am doing an act that's destroying it. Once it's not edible anymore, then I could get rid of it. Just a second. So we said we have the fruit that's from Chutz Laretz, we have the fruit that's Otzer Beis Din, and then we have the fruit that's Yevul Nochri. What's Yevul Nochri? Well, there's a lot of non-Jewish owned land in Israel. So what happens if you go to the Arab farmer in Maale Adumim and you tell him, I want to buy your food from you. Is that food holy or not? It's growing in Israel in the year of Shemitah. Two opinions. So that was a machloket in the days of Rav Yosef Karo, a famous machloket, Rav Yosef Karo of Shulchan Aruch and the Mabit. And here in Yerushalayim, our custom is to be lenient that Yevul Nochri, the crops of a non-Jew, are not holy on Shemitah. In Bnei Brak, they go with the Mabit. They don't go with Rav Yosef Karo. They hold that you treat it as holy food, even if it's Yevul Nochri. And now we come to the fourth category, what's called Heter Mechira. Approximately 700 years ago, in the land of Israel, the farmers saw that they couldn't last during Shemitah. So the rabbis, about 700 years ago, came up with the following halachic invention. They said, we will sell the land to a non-Jew, and then we will be able to plant and grow the food in the land because it will be owned by a non-Jew. So even though it's in the land of Israel in the year of Shemitah, we will do this. But it's not a good idea. No one likes it. But at least it would allow the Jews to continue living in Israel and the farmers to continue prospering in Israel. So about 100 years ago, 150 years ago, when Jews started resettling the land of Israel, the question came up again, what do we do in Shemitah? So the rabbis, again, permitted them to do Heter Mechira. And then Rav Kook became the chief rabbi of Israel. And when he became chief rabbi of Israel, he was going to continue what everyone before him had done. Only he invented more stringencies in the Heter Mechira, more angles to try and make it even more kosher. And at that time, many rabbis started going out against Rav Kook, and they said, this generation no longer needs this leniency. It's a problematic leniency. You shouldn't permit it. And this became a huge explosion here in Israel. And for the last 70 years, it's been a point of conflict where rabbis today have argued that even Rav Kook wouldn't permit the Heter Mechira today. That 70 years ago, the farmers were a major component of the industry in Israel. It was necessary. Today, what are we? 3% is farmers. There's a very, very small percentage of the people who are farmers. And the argument is it's no longer necessary. So the way we view Heter Mechira, some people will say it's very important because this way you don't support Jordan and Gaza. Other people will say halachically it's a problem. Other people will argue when you go now and buy your fruits and vegetables in the local makolet, you don't bother checking, but you're buying Arab food. You're supporting the same countries, meaning much of the produce you buy every year is from Gaza and Jordan. Part of our peace treaty with Jordan is that we will buy, I don't know how many tons a year, of tomatoes from them. It's part of the deal. We give them water from the Jordan, and we guarantee them we will buy produce from them. So much of the produce that's here is Jordanian grown and grown in Gaza every year. So there's a big argument about what's the best route to take, whether the Heter Mechira is valid today or not altogether, and whether it's the better route or the less preferred route. When the year of Shemitah comes, if you're going to be a guest by someone, I think you have no problem relying on the Heter Mechira, and if they serve you Heter Mechira food, you can enjoy it, and you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to start asking them, is it Heter Mechira or not? If you are going to bring them a bottle of wine and grape juice, even today, when you go to the local makolet, many of the wines and grape juice are still Heter Mechira. So you have to be sensitive that some people are uncomfortable receiving grape juice or wine, because there are definitely opinions that are not so fond of this, of the heter mechira. So it's not the appropriate thing. You're bringing a host, bring something that you know they're going to be comfortable drinking. We're short on time. Let's hold off on questions for a few more minutes. So the year of Shemitah comes. I definitely recommend you should buy oats or bez din fruit. Make sure to buy that. We have another issue that comes up with Shemitah, which is called biur. The Torah says the fruit of the land should be available to you and your animal and the wild animal in the fields. So our sages understood from that you could only bring home food for yourself and your animal so long as the identical food is available out in the field. Once that crop is finished in the field, you have to finish off what you have at home. So let's take the grapes. You go and harvest grapes and you make grape juice. So now you have bottles of grape juice at home. Well, comes Hanukkah, Purim, Pesach, after Shemitah, and there are no more grapes out in the field for the animals. So the halacha says you have to get rid of all the grape juice in your house. That's called biur. Wait a second, then how come now we're 2.5 years after Shemitah and the stores are still selling Otzer Bezdin and Heter Mechira grape juice? What about biur? You go in the shuk, some of the oranges you're buying, some of the citrus fruits are 2 years old from Shemitah. You'll see on the Hechsher, it'll say that. In the rabbinate's Hechsher. So what's going on here? So the Rash is of the opinion, it says in the Jerusalem Talmud, that what you're supposed to do, and you'll see people doing this before Pesach, is you go in the late afternoon hours when everyone's leaving the main streets, it's getting dark, and you wait till there are only a few people around, and you take out your Shemitah fruit that the time of beer has arrived, and you say, it's Hefker, whoever wants can take it. It's Hefker, whoever wants can take it. It's Hefker, whoever wants can take it. You wait a few minutes, no one took it, you take it and bring it back home. So I remember once going outside, and I see a neighbor of mine, he's taken out like cartons of grape juice. You're talking about he took out maybe 50, 60 bottles, you know, carton after carton. And he's standing there and he goes, it's Hefker, whoever wants can take it. I stood there watching, huh? Really? I said, I can take a carton? I said, it's Hefker? So I didn't. But technically, halachically, I could. I mean, he said it's Hefker, right? You would have taken. Okay, so he's lucky you were in there. So that's biur, yeah. Biur, you got to get rid of, you take it out of your domain. So that's the mitzvah of biur. And that's why it's not so clear when you go and buy the wine and grape juice in the store, who did biur? Meaning it was in the warehouse a year ago. When the time of biur came, did anyone actually do biur on those grape juice and wine bottles that are in Rami Levi and Yenot Bitan? If you go right now, the Baron Herzog wines, some of their Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, some of their chosen collection of Baron Herzog is Heter Mechira. If you go and see the Tirosh grape juice, the famous Tirosh company here in Israel, much of their grape juice on the shelves still now, 2.5 years after Shemitah, is Heter Mechira. So now the question becomes, well, who did beer on it? So that's why every person has to ask their local Orthodox rabbi if it's okay to purchase that. Same thing with the wines. There are wines of Otzer Bezdin. Yenot Bitan right now is selling wines of Otzer Bezdin. That means the courts oversaw it. It's holy. It's Shemitah wine. And you have to know the stringencies of that. You're not allowed to take Shemitah fruit outside Israel. That means you can't bring that wine to your parents when you're going to visit them in Chutz Laretz. If you buy an Esrog of Shemitah, and you're going to go fly to Chutz Laretz, aside from the problem that many countries won't let you bring fruit in, you're not allowed to take Shemitah fruit outside Israel. So, yes. You could eat an etrog. You choose not to.
You could eat it, but
you really can eat it.
Like Mishreda Bryu recommends not to eat it because it's not sold as a food item, so it has a lot of pesticides.
Okay. I don't know. Yes, sir.
Is it in the year of Shemitah and the year of Jubilee where whereby Jewish slaves are allowed are released?
We'll get to that.
If it's before 7 years.
That's Yovel. Only Yovel, not Shemitah.
Why do they allow that before the 6 years are up? Why is it allowed to be? Why are you supposed to release them before 6 years?
I hope we'll get to that. If not tonight, then Thursday night. We didn't discuss Yovel at all. There's a lot to discuss about that. Good evening, Yoel. Right. Well, lulav, adasim, arava, those aren't edible. Your problem is the esrog.
Okay. Before you had like talk about two opinions. If an Arab has a land, it's considered holy or not, is true.
Correct.
Shouldn't it be the same for Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria?
Thursday night. It's a good question. Thursday night. Okay? Remind me. We'll get back to that decision.
A question for Shemitah that I hear it gets thrown around a lot is that Shemitah is only obligatory when there's more than half the people living in the country, or it has to be on the word of a prophet that this is the Shemitah year. Because from the time of Chizkiyahu, from when Ashur came in and kicked out 10 tribes, we didn't have most of the Jewish people living in.
There's a book there written by the rabbi in Tzfat. It's called Shulchan Aruch. You want to bring me Yoreh Deh Gimel? We'll see what it says there.
One time you said Thursday night, and it was...
Thank you.
1 month because there was no Thursday night.
Ay, ay, ay. Okay, in this version it's not in Gimel. Sorry.
I'll get Dalet.
Dalet, yeah. See if it has Simon Shin Lamed Aleph before you schlep out here.
No, I was wondering what has the grape juice to do with the folks eating grapes?
Thank you. So now you know?
No. Doesn't. Yeah. The folks eat grapes, when the grapes are finished, it's finished. It has nothing to do with grape juice, what I have in my cellar.
So I'll get back to you in a minute.
Oh, no, but it's not necessarily the answer. I have struggled with that for many years.
Okay. The longest siman in Shulchan Aruch is siman Shin Lamed Aleph, which technically does not discuss Shemitah. Technically, it discusses Trumos and Maestros. Okay? So you could argue, what's your proof? But we'll read the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. And then we'll read the Gra, and then we'll see if we have clarity. Okay. Let's see. One second. Okay, we'll deal only with this. There's more to be discussed, but we'll deal only here. Shulchan Aruch, Truma and Maestros. Should I read the Hebrew? I'll just read the English. You guys want the Hebrew too? How many people want the Hebrew? Okay. Hatrumot v'amasot enan noagin min haTorah ela be'eretz Yisrael. Truma and Maestros, biblically, are only obligatory in Israel. Ben bifnei habayit, ben shelo bifnei habayit. It doesn't matter if the temple is built or not. Even if the temple is destroyed, there's a mitzvah of Trumos and Maestros. Halacha Beis, I'm skipping the rest of the details here because they're not so relevant. He talks about the map, what you were discussing, how far is the land of Israel obligatory. Bizman hazeh, nowadays, afilu bimkom shechziku bo'olei Bavel, even the areas that were conquered in the Second Temple period, en chiyuv tumot masot min haTorah ela midivreihem, the obligation for Truma and Maestros today is only rabbinic, because the Torah describes ki tavo, when all of you ascend to the land of Israel, and in the days of Ezra, only part of the Jewish people ascended, you didn't have a complete ascent. Hago, says the Ramah, some are of the opinion that the obligation of Truma and Maestros today in Israel is biblical. That's not our custom, says the Ramah. So first of all, starting point. It's not clear that we're only obligated rabbinically. It's our custom to treat Truma and Maestros today as rabbinic. Wait, we haven't spoken about Shemitah yet. This is Truma and Maestros. Says the Gra. The Gra over here says the Gra over here says that the sanctity of the land of Israel for Trumos and Maestros is rabbinic. And the same is true for Shemitah nowadays, that the obligation of Shemitah nowadays is rabbinic. That's the Gra over here.
That's hard for you to understand, because most of the Jews haven't lived in Israel, not from the time of Ezra, but from the time of when Sanherib kicked out the 10 tribes. But those 70 years that we didn't keep 70 Shemitahs and Yovels, saying they would only come up to 70 if we were to count the time after Sanherib kicked out the 10 tribes.
Right. Tosus asked that somewhere.
What did he answer it with?
I don't remember. So the question's asked. I don't remember the answer. I don't remember. That's yes. Wanted something? No. Okay. What?
Ten tribes were more or less destroyed.
Okay.
If more ten tribes were destroyed, then the two tribes that they were referring to.
right?
Deserves maybe a Friday night. We have a lot more to cover in the parasha. We got only 5 minutes. Yeah. Okay. So the concept you asked about, why are the grapes in the field connected to the grape juice in my house? The Torah says, I want the fruits of Shemitah to be available to you and your animals, your domesticated animals at home, and the wild animals in the field. Chazal had a tradition that this means that all three act together. So long as there's fruit left out in the field, you and your animals can enjoy it at home. The second the grapes in the field are finished, you can no longer enjoy your grapes or grape juice at home as your own. The Torah says, I want a certain equality. Everyone enjoys. So long as they can enjoy, you can enjoy. If there's no more grapes left in the fields, you can't enjoy in the house the grape juice and the wine and whatever you've made of the grapes. That's the idea. That's the idea of beer. Yeah?
How is it? Makes it very difficult. Like you need 52 bottles for the whole year for a couple of children. So what you do? You need the grape juice. What do you do there? It doesn't enter my logic.
Maybe you import. Maybe they had to live with imported. I mean, maybe they were supposed to import grape juice or wine. Anyways, it lasts till Pesach. Meaning usually until Pesach, there's still grapes out in the field. By Pesach, you have the New Year's crop, I think. I don't know. No, that's not true. No, Baron Herzog said not so.
The
grapes is right.
December is finished. Rain comes and the snow comes.
Right. The question is, how long does it take the crop to grow? And they they had wine from the sixth year.
Then you have the
but they stored
years.
Wine. They had wine from the fifth and sixth year. They kept wine from the previous years. For sure. They always planned. Yeah. They did plan. Today we plan. You know, in Hanukkah, the stores are already preparing for Pesach.
Yeah.
I'm saying today we also plan a half a year in advance. Right after Hanukkah, I go matzah baking.
Okay.
That's, okay. We have a mitzvah of Yovel. The Torah says, after seven sets of seven, you sanctify the 50th year. Now, it's a reset button. What happens in the 50th year is every family goes back to their plot of land. So any sale of land is considered temporary. So every family goes back, you get back your land, and slaves all go free. Even a slave that was sold a year ago. So when you sell a slave, you better factor how many years are left till Yovel. And everyone is given a new opportunity. It's a new start for the land. Now, just as on Shabbos, when we stop working one day a week, we declare Hashem is king, and we live in His planet, and He's the boss. So too on Shemitah, when a person says, I'm not working this year, part of that is a declaration, Hashem's the boss. I live in His planet. I'm working in His field. This isn't mine. Now that's a hard thing to do. It says those are giborei koach osei dvaro, people who are powerful to do the will of Hashem. If you were concerned what people do for 1 year without food, well, here they had 2 years. But I'll tell you what, for my kids at home, I don't like buying produce from Jordan, and I don't like buying heter mechira. So what I do is I boost their folic acid and B12 in the year of Shemitah. If 6 years they don't eat a lot of hummus and chickpeas and rice and corn, in the year of Shemitah, suddenly we eat a lot of legumes, so their diet gets enriched with other foods that on other years they eat less. I don't often make lima. My wife doesn't often make lima beans and other stuff on the Shemitah year, so we eat whatever fruits are available, Jewish grown, oats are based in. And the kids develop their diet in other areas. So I don't eat tomatoes for 6 months. What happened? So there's a year I don't eat tomatoes. Big deal. My grandparents didn't eat tomatoes in Europe their whole life, you know. So you have 1 year where you don't eat tomatoes. There's other delicious, wonderful food to eat. I'm saying today it's really not a big deal. I'm saying it's really not so difficult. I know we live in a society where if you don't have tomatoes for 2 days, it's a big deal. But the truth is, it's not. I mean, we have so many other foods, okay? And it's healthy. There's nothing wrong. You don't have to eat a tomato. There are other foods, and they're also healthy. So on Yovel, you have 2 years. You have the Shemitah, the 49th year, and you have the Yovel, the 50th year. The Yovel revolves around the blowing of the shofar. On Yom Kippur, they blow the shofar, and then everything goes back. That's the reset button. So on Rosh Hashanah, the servants would go on vacation on the owner's expense. They'd spend 10 days partying. They didn't have to work from Rosh Hashanah onward, but they only went home on Yovel. At the end of Yom Kippur, they blow shofar and they go home. Yes, sir. Correct. Even if he sold it, everyone knows that when the Yovel comes, it goes back to the original tribe, to the original owner. And the exceptions to this we will discuss on Thursday. Yes? That's a good question. We generally assume that they're both, being that Yovel is like Shemitah, everything's free for all, and when the Torah entitles the Levi and the Kohen to their portion, the Torah says, "Uvaha Levi ki ein lo chelek v'nachalaimach." The Levi will come; you'll give him his gifts because he does not get a portion in the land. So, from there, our sages understood they had a tradition that it means that where it's hefker, where it's Shemitah, and the Levi and I are equal because everyone has equal entitlement to the produce. So then, you don't have to give truma and meiser. Because it's all available to everyone. It's all hefker. Okay, so we'll end with the Torah's directive, don't cheat. The Torah says, don't cheat. Twice the Torah says, don't afflict your fellow man. You know Yovel is 2 years away, so make the sale a legitimate sale. Don't try to cheat him. He'll think he's buying it for 20 years, and then in 2 years he'll have a surprise and you'll take it back. But the Torah says twice, don't afflict your fellow man. And our tradition is the second time is there to teach us we are not allowed to say anything that would be hurtful to someone else. How far does this go? It's a hot, steamy day. You're walking in the street. You see a beautiful jewelry store. They have excellent air conditioning, so you walk in. You ask, what's the price of that? And the store owner tells you, $50,000. So you go, can you show me something with a few more pearls? And you're going to waste his time looking around his jewelry when you know full well you're not buying anything. You just want some respite from the heat. Torah says that's prohibited. Don't afflict your fellow man. To walk into a store when you know you're not going to buy anything and waste the store owner's time, that's part of Lo Tanui Shetamito. Where else does it apply? Our sages say, a person has to be extra careful when he speaks to his wife because women hurt more easily. So that's another application. Obviously, I'm not allowed to say something hurtful to any person. I have to be more sensitive when that person is more sensitive. And Bezrat Hashem, on Thursday night, we will begin here with the Gemarot about the care we have to take not to hurt someone else's feelings.